And welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Gary Rivlin, a special correspondent for Newsweek and The Daily Beast. He is the author of five books, including Broke USA, From Pawn Shops to Poverty, Inc., How the Working Poor Became Big Business. He has worked as a staff reporter for The New York Times, where his beats included Silicon Valley and New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gary Rivlin.
Thanks, Ian.
And there is obviously a subtext to the Richard Cordray story here, in as much as it's, first of all, Elizabeth Warren was blocked from heading up the agency that she created, the Bureau, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that came out of the Dodd-Frank Act. The president's now been forced to give Richard Cordray a recess appointment, which has already upset the Republicans. But isn't the real truth of the matter is that as long as Cordray wasn't in heading up this office could not act on its mandate to oversee mortgage companies, payday lenders, and debt collectors, among others. Is that that's the
right? It was a really strange circumstance for a few months there, because the agency went live in July, and while it could still monitor the behavior of banks, it couldn't use the rulemaking power that Congress and the president invested in it. So it was an agency. It was trying to do work, but the most important thing about it is that it has rulemaking power. If they think there's something wrong with the way debt collectors are going about their business, they could write new rules that change that. If they are upset, if they conclude, to use the language of Dodd-Frank, that the payday lenders are selling an unfair, deceptive, or abusive product, they could create rules to deal with that. But until there was a permanent executive director in Richard Cordray, they couldn't write any rules. For some reason, Congress, the way they wrote the legislation, said you have all this power, but until there's a director, you can't use that power.
So was this then a delaying tactic then to keep the director out so that they couldn't make the rules? Because they've made no bones about the fact that, in fact, the Republicans really seem to revile the Dodd-Frank Act.
And the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in particular. I mean, more to the point, the banks and the payday lenders and the debt collectors all revile the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and of course they've been big donors to the Republicans because the Republicans have been willing to take on this fight. It's interesting because I think it was 44 Republican senators said that no matter who the nominee is, we don't care what that person's name is, as long as it has the powers that it has, we're going to refuse to consider that appointment. And in fact, it's exactly that. It was a delaying tactic. And, you know, to a certain extent, it's been successful despite this maneuver by the president. According to the legislation, a director gets a five-year term. But as a recess appointment, which is what Richard Cordray is, he's only going to be able to serve through the end of this term for the president. I mean, I guess Obama, if he's reelected, can re-up him. But instead of a five-year term, he's essentially getting a one-year term. But, you know, the president was boxed in. That, you know, our system says that, you know, 40 senators can hold things up, that even though the Senate could approve Cordray, they would have the power to hold it up with the threat of
filibuster, right?
Filibuster, thank
but you. That's not a that's not our system. That's a reinterpretation of our system that relatively recently by the Republicans in the Senate.
Though in fairness, the Democrats used it under Bush as well. But yes, it's a recent version. You don't even have to filibuster anymore. You just have to say
I'm not,
this isn't Mr. Smith goes to Washington. No one actually has to stand up and hold forth.
And Cordray
threatened it, and that's good enough.
Right. And Cordray actually got 54 votes he was approved by the Senate, but it's not the magical 60.
Exactly.
So I'm trying to figure out here, where the support. I mean, first of all, you have to ask yourself, surely, Gary Rivlin, what happened to the short-term memory of this country? It was only back in 2008 that we had the subprime bubble that was directly related to deregulation on Wall Street. We've also seen how the five-member commission of the that oversees the futures market, the consumer. CTFC, whatever it's called.
Mr. Gensler from Goldman Sachs and Company, yes.
Right, and the reason the Republicans want a commission instead of a bureau is that they've been effectively able to stymie the oversight over the the gaming of the price of oil and food. So the question would be is, why doesn't the president or somebody point out to the American people that, you know, you're getting screwed, both in the terms of the cost of food, the cost of gasoline, and the cost of mortgages, and this could be really good for you. And the reason we're in trouble is not too much regulation, but too little.
Well, I mean, to me, that's one of the great mysteries of the last 2 or 3 years. If you ask me what happened, how did we come up with the subprime mortgage crisis? You know, how is subprime credit generally, whether it's payday loans, subprime mortgages, subprime credit cards, how did it get so out of hand and end up virtually taking down the global economy? I would have started explaining to you that it's 30 years of deregulation. Ever since the Reagan era, we deregulated mortgages. That started in 1980, 81, 82, and that led to countrywide AmeriQuest and these abusive subprime loans that had no basis in reality. The lending terms, it didn't make a difference if someone could pay it back because they were just going to securitize and sell it to Wall Street. I would say that was purely because of deregulation, and yet you watch the Republican debates, you listen to the Republican talking points, and they say the problem with the Obama administration with Dodd-Frank is overregulation. I'm thinking, like, my God, are we looking at the same picture? In fact, I'm reading the new book by Thomas Frank, Pity the Billionaire, and it's about this very contradiction. How did this happen? How are we hearing that we need to deregulate after 30 years of deregulation caused calamity in the world economic market?
Well, but there is a sort of pattern that repeats itself, doesn't it? I mean, my understanding is that there's also a bubble developing now in the student loan for-profit college racket that now Wall Street is getting into. But the weird part about these things is that it's government money that's being loaned out in the case of student loans, and it's all being enabled through lobbyists. I mean, in other words, that the private for-profit colleges depend 90% on the government for their money, and they're making huge profits at the same time. And that's because of lobbying. What's the role of lobbying in keeping these payday lenders, these bottom feeders, in the mix?
Well, the Payday Lender Association, the various payday lenders spend millions of dollars a year lobbying. But, you know, I do want to point out that, you know, the payday lenders, the debt collectors, all these other fringe financial operations, they lost. I mean, I think maybe that's what's most galling to me personally about these efforts to undermine the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Before it began, you know, these 44 Republican senators said, hey, it shouldn't be a single director, as you said, it should be a five-person board. They shouldn't have the independence of budget that they have. You know, the Republicans in Congress are saying, this is so irresponsible, they don't have to come before Congress for their funding. Well, that was deliberate. I'm sorry, you lost the fight during the last congressional session, and, you know, the consumers won. This is, we might have disappointments with Dodd-Frank, but the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is a great thing. And if you read the blogs of the payday lenders and their, you know, their association, you know, that was a crushing loss for them. So I actually do have high hopes for this new agency that they maybe can start to rein in the abuse, despite the lobbyists, despite the best efforts of the Republicans to undermine this bureau before it began. You know, it's just kind of like, what can they do? For those who don't know, a payday loan is a short-term loan that if you express the rate they charge for this loan for 2 weeks, it comes out to an annual interest rate of 400%. Dodd-Frank said that this new bureau does not have the right to create a usury cap. You cannot say, Richard Cordray cannot say, you know, any loan above 36% annual percentage rate is too high. He doesn't have that ability. But, you know, there's still a lot of room in the law to rein these folks in. What is abusive lending? You can't change the interest rate, but maybe you could say no more than 6 in a year, because to pay those kind of fees all year would be abusive. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting to me. You know, what do they do about debt collection? I have a big feature in this week's Newsweek about debt collectors. I mean, the data is astonishing that as much as people have always complained about debt collectors in these hard economic times, complaints about debt collectors to federal authorities has gone up 20%, 30% just over last year. So between 2009 and 2010, you know, the complaints that the federal government's getting about abusive debt collectors, using abusive language, using threat of violence, calling, you know, off hours, is very strict hours when they can and cannot call. And so, you know, I really feel like finally there's going to be an agency in our corner. And will they do everything we hope they do? No. But even if they help make mortgages more clear and fairer, even if they curtail payday lending without doing it in, even if they rein in debt collectors so there's less abuse, I think it's at least a step forward.
Well, that's what you would think, though, that that this would be something that could be championed, because I recall a while, not so long ago, because the debt collectors, the payday lenders, tend to prey on soldiers and vets. And the military, the brass in the Pentagon stepped in and had a law passed to keep them away from a military basis, because they were flocking around military bases like flies, you know. And you were mentioning the 400% interest rate, which would make the mafia blush. That's the part of it that I find so extraordinary, that members of Congress, and in particular the Republican Party, would be protecting people whose social function is so malignant.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There have been some conservatives who've spoken out against payday lenders. Even Adam Smith, I mean, you know, the hero of free market types, even Adam Smith in his writing spoke about the necessity for fair lending rates, that if there was abusive, if there's usurious lending, the free market wouldn't work. And so there are some true conservatives out there who do think this is above and beyond these kind of interest rates. And one thing I want to say is that a lot of people, like, look at whoever the appointment is to head the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and her name is not Elizabeth Warren. But, you know, the consumer groups are really high on Cordray. He was attorney general in Ohio right around the time of the subprime meltdown, and he was really good and really strong in taking off after the banks and other abusive mortgage lender. So he has a track record. He is somebody that has the consumer groups feeling encouraged that, okay, it's not Elizabeth Warren, but this is somebody who's been fighting the fight and actually is more of a politician than Elizabeth Warren. She, of course, is running for Senate, so now she's a politician. But until that, she had never been in politics. So, you know, it's there's some disappointment it's not Elizabeth Warren, but, you know, by and large, the consumer champions are very pleased with it being Cordray.
Well, but it's worth noting, Gary, that Elizabeth Warren is doing very well as a politician, and she's very popular. And to the extent that Scott Brown, her Republican opponent, broke ranks of the Republicans and supported the appointment of Cordray. So maybe this is a winning issue.
Don't get me wrong. She's an astonishingly good politician. Yeah. I'm just saying she wasn't a practiced politician, and you know, like Cordray. I'm paying a lot of attention to the Massachusetts race. It seems dead even between, you know, a guy who has a lot of political experience and, you know, Elizabeth Warren, who's a newcomer, at least to the electoral arena. I mean, I think what's beautiful about this is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was, in fact, her idea. Obama got the idea from Elizabeth Warren. He named her as the person to put it together, and so everyone could feel good about, like, okay, the architect put this thing together, and now I feel like you get kind of two for the price of one. She's the one who hired Cordray to oversee enforcement for the agency. It wasn't in the cards that she was going to get the executive directorship. She goes and runs for Senate, stands a pretty good chance, I would say, of winning the Massachusetts seat. And the person she appointed to a top position within the Bureau is now running it.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, Gary Rivlin.
My pleasure, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Gary Rivlin, a special correspondent for Newsweek and The Daily Beast. He's the author of five books, including Broke USA, From Pawn Shops to Poverty, Inc., How the Working Poor Became Big Business. He's worked also as a staff reporter for the New York Times. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graeme Fitzgibbons. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again on Sunday with another at 11 with another Background Briefing. Until then, bye for now.